Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And we're back. This is You, the Owner's Manual Podcast. This is number 866 for those of you keeping score at home. And as promised, we have a sensational guest. Whether you consider him the Billie Jean King, if you're a woman, or the Lou Gehrig or Babe Ruth, if you're a guy, he has had that much effect on our food, eating habits, and overall well-being. Joel Fuhrman is the author of the new book, Fast Food Genocide, and we're lucky enough to get him with us now. Joel, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me. Excited to talk to you today.
Now, the title obviously implies that we're killing at least the United States, if not the whole world, with fast food. Is that the gist of the meaning of the title?
It's a little bit complicated, but yeah, certainly that. I mean, certainly we know right now that, for example, fast food, and considering fast food, and considering processed foods, junk food, candy, soda, you know, things you buy in convenience stores, fried foods, barbecue, you know, things that have all these carcinogens and artificial ingredients. It's not only the food you buy in a fast food restaurant. And some fast food restaurants could be selling some healthy things too. So it's not just a general, you know, blanket negativity of everything going on in that movement. But what I have to say is this, is that a lot of people know that these junk foods and fast foods are causing obesity and diabetes and heart attacks and strokes and dementia. But what they don't know right now...
And cancer while we're waiting.
And cancer, right. They know that. But they don't know how it causes violence and predisposes you to drug use, how it lowers human intelligence, how it's the leading cause of mental illness. And the link between candy and crime is better than the link between bad parents or lack of parenting or living in poverty. We're talking here about foods that destroy not just the body, but the brain. And the human brain is a fragile human organ that needs a continual supply of antioxidants and phytochemicals. And when given the synthetic high caloric concentration and hormonal effects of fast food and concentrated calories, it destroys brain cells even at a young age. And people just don't relate fast food to when your kid has autism or allergies or autoimmune disease or a brain tumor in the first 5 years of life. They don't see how we pass on these negative epigenetic effects to future generations. Like, let me just say this for an example. Like, this will shock people. One serving of commercial French fries a week is linked to a 26% increased risk of breast cancer, for example. Or two servings of commercial baked goods like donuts or cookies or fast food a week is linked to a 51% increased risk of developing depression. And it's, and the studies show a dose-dependent relationship. So as you go from two servings to three, four, five, or seven servings, the risk goes up from 51% to much higher risks. And we're talking about a genocide that is occurring to urban populations. And it's a form of...
And it's urban populations around the world. We've exported this habit pretty well.
Right. We export the habit pretty well. And in our own country, it's had vulnerable populations and an inordinate negative effect on our Black Americans who are in inner cities without access to produce, with only fast food and processed foods and convenience stores. And it's been a source of enhancing bigotry and racism in America.
Now, that's some of the most interesting part, and let me get to that in a second. But clearly, if you look at the areas where fast food started, it started in San Diego and moved to Chicago and pretty quickly got populated in the Midwest. Tell me why did it develop so well in the Midwest? Why did it take so long to get to, for example, California? San Francisco has only had one or two McDonald's in its entire existence and very few other fast food restaurants. Is that why Silicon Valley is so good? Go a little further. And does New York City have as many McDonald's, for example, or fast food restaurants? I don't mean to just typify processed food restaurants with McDonald's, using them as the guide, as, say, for instance, Chicago does.
Right. And, you know, that's right. New York is not as bad as Chicago, as Trenton, you know, St. Louis. There are certain areas where we call them food deserts, and the government determines those food deserts by not just the presence of fast food restaurants, but the lack of supermarket access and how many miles you have to drive the car to get to some form of fruits and vegetables or beans to find foods that aren't convenient.
And many people in those areas don't have cars.
Exactly. The transportation is unavailable. These fast foods and convenience store foods are made very cheap, and so they're designed to be highly addictive, and they affect human intelligence, and they affect the drive. They lessen your drive, the better yourself in life come out. In other words, when you're an addict, it takes over part of the brain. Your primitive brain is affected, so you no longer. It's harder to make it to come out of poverty or break your addiction. And what I'm saying here is that it contributes. Fast food, fried foods, and sugar and sweeteners contribute to drug addiction. And the number one people that are in federal prisons today, most people are there because of nonviolent related drug abuse offenses. So they're there because of drug use and buying drugs. And it traces it down to a larger that stimulatory effect on the brain, desire to have to use drugs. It starts from childhood of sweets and candy and fast food and synthetic food. And then it leads to, of course, alcohol and other drugs that really have been a tremendous negative effect on our society.
Well, but let me go in. There must be some areas in, for example, with similar socioeconomic situations that don't have fast food and that would then help you validate that hypothesis. And I know you developed this very well in the book. So let me just give you the soft pitch, if you will. How do we really know this really is a cause of, for example, mental dysfunction and ADHD and drug use?
Right. You know, there's a lot of ways we can answer that question. Number one, we know that when we intervene in populations that have poor nutrition, even when we intervene with prisoners or people who are in prison, and we start to feed them better, and we have them involved with their own growing their own food and eating more vegetables, they have less recidivism. They get out of jail and they don't go back as much. When we do it with kids with behavioral problems who are in special schools because of bad behavior, we feed them better. They have better behavior and they have better intelligence, a better chance of going to college. We study this with people who have, we study their relationship between how much fast food and processed food they eat and how they do they well in school on exams and whether they get into college and how they perform in school. Maybe it relates back to that. And also, you know, we also test this because we also see in populations that don't have access to these foods, they perform much better. And one of the reasons why I'm saying it leads to a form of bigotry, which is very prevalent in the medical profession, because we learn in medical school that Black Americans have higher rates of diabetes and obesity and breast cancer and prostate cancer, and they have and urban places where people of lesser economic means eating fast foods have seven times the risk of early life stroke. And we're taught in medical school that it's something to do with racial differences. And it's not, because I showed in the book that there were more centenarians, more Blacks living, Black Americans living to be 100 years old than there were white Americans after the Civil War. And Blacks achieved educational achievements. And we're talking here about this. We blame it on the race and not on the foods that we're putting people in poor economic, we're putting people in very bad situations and not having access to food and not even educating, teaching, or making foods available to people. So there's a tremendous amount of food inequality going on and food distribution inequality. And then it's blamed. And then, of course, the results are seen along racial lines. And I'm lobbying here for is the fact that as Americans, we're all for enabling us to have an equal opportunity, enabling people to have an equal chance to achieve the American dream. Sharing and working together to elevate the well-being and the happiness of all people. And this information is so critical, and I'm so passionate, because there's so much more we could do to help people and give people a chance to get a better life and to get out of poverty and to achieve.
Now, Joel, as you know, and Mehmet says it, Dr. Oz says it probably as much as anyone, but Oprah's the one who taught all of us, just information doesn't change behavior. It is emotion. So obviously your passion is important here, but how do we get, you know, we've become a nation that is populated by a huge number of fast food restaurants. McDonald's says it is a person's best first job, and many people, you know, there aren't the paperboy jobs that you probably had, but I definitely had. And so how do we change this? Yeah, we're going to have to make the fast serve restaurants like Chick-fil-A, that are a little higher priced, and the goods at McDonald's, are we going to have to subsidize fruits and vegetables and leafy greens the same way that soy and corn that lead to hamburgers and french fries are subsidized? How do we get out of this?
Well, right. There's a lot, there's a million different things we can do.
Hold on. Before you answer that, I'm going to ask Radio MD's Bill Kaproth is going to talk about this episode's sponsor. Bill?
More with Dr. Michael Roizen and the You, the Owner's Manual podcast coming up. Here's the deal. To truly thrive in all areas of your life, you cannot ignore the importance of good health. I've learned this firsthand, and for many of us, time is our most valuable asset. This is why I love Organifi Green Juice, an organic superfood green juice powder you just add water to get your greens anytime, anywhere, without the mess. Plus, you can now enjoy Organifi Red Juice Powder too. When you invest in your health, you gain more time because you have more energy and focus to get through your day. The best thing about Organifi Green and Red Juice is that it actually tastes good. Try it for yourself. Use the code YOU, Y-O-U, at Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com. Once again, use the code YOU, that's Y-O-U, to receive 20% off your order at Organifi.com. And You, the Owner's Manual podcast is brought to you by Memory Rescue, the brand new book that can help you with your memory. Let's hear from its author.
Hi, I'm Dr. Daniel Amen, author of a new book called Memory Rescue. Memory Rescue teaches you how to prevent future problems, but if you're having memory problems now, how to rescue it, how to get it back so that everything in your life can be better. Plant the habits that I talk in your life. I know it'll make a dramatic difference for you and for those you love.
It's important that you receive this information. Get your copy of Memory Rescue by Dr. Daniel Amen. Learn more at memoryrescuebook.com. That's memoryrescuebook.com. And now back to Dr. Michael Roizen and the You, the Owner's Manual podcast.
Thanks very much, Bill. Okay, Joel. Now, we're talking with Joel Fuhrman. We asked him what I think is the key question and one that he deals with in this book. The book is called Fast Food Genocide. He's not condemning all fast food restaurants. What he's doing is condemning processed food that has simple carbohydrates, salt, simple sugar in it as a main usage, and quoted in the first part, I think the statistic that there's about a 50% increase in breast cancer rates if you have two servings of fast food a week, and that one French fry serving a week increased the breast cancer by about 26%. So how do we get rid? In other words, they're part of our culture. Don't we just have to change what we eat there? And how do we do that?
You know, I know that there's no way we could impart all the information necessary on this conversation, how the changes that need to be done. But some of those changes have already been instituted in New York City, for example, and the health of New Yorkers have benefited immensely as food stamps. Now they set up food carts, fresh food and vegetable carts along all the parts of the city, especially in areas of lesser economic where there aren't supermarkets. And they're allowing food stamps to get a special discounted rate or a better rate when they're buying fresh produce. Some of these things that have been happening and have already been shown to be beneficial and to be working already and within certain cities. But the bottom line here is that now that we know how the impact that food has so negatively or so positively on the outcome of people's lives, especially for mental health, that this is something should be taught in the schools, reading, writing, arithmetic, and nutritional science. Because people always ask me, well, why don't doctors know more about nutrition? I'm saying, wait a minute, it's not the role of doctors to teach us mathematics either. You know, we only spend 10 minutes with a doctor anyway. This is a whole societal thing. In other words, we're talking about educators, we're talking about teachers, we're talking about politicians, we're talking about celebrities, we're talking about athletes, we're talking about yourself, whatever you put on the oxygen mask. We have to re-educate Americans. And the idea that we learn from the ivory towers of that people in lower economic means don't want to, can't learn or change is incorrect. We're seeing that they see the Dahara around them. They see people having strokes and diabetes and leg amputations and kidney failure. They're hungry for change. And when they're given the right information and they're taught how important this is and they're given access to the food, to fresh food, showing them how to make it taste good, we're seeing these people make changes for their own betterment and embracing making better decisions about their life. So it's not, how should I say, it's not all negative here, that if we work together, we can see a lot of tremendous positive change. And I'm love, and of course, I wanted to put all this information in one place to start a movement, and people could take my work in like a textbook and they could change their own, use it to help the PTA and have the kid not bring, you know, candy into their schoolrooms, or they could bring it to, they could, you know, talk about it in their churches and their PTA meetings. Educators, colleges or high schools could use it as a teaching tool. We're talking here about we all can do our part. It's not going to come from one person or one part of society. It's going to not just come from politicians or changing laws. It has to be permeate all aspects of our society, and we have to move gradually in a sensible and logical fashion to improving our health across this country.
Now, are there examples of people who've really been raised on fast food where this kind of change has been made and they've ended up being able to, well, break the fast food addiction, but break their, if you will, their ADHD or their autism or their other addictions?
Right. You know, obviously we have a lot of problems and people with medical problems, and I don't want people to underestimate the miraculous healing potential of a human body when it's fed in an ideal fashion. In other words, what I'm saying right now is nutritional excellence has tremendous power as a therapeutic tool to improve emotional outlook and concentration and cognition, to enable the brain to reach its potential, to enable people to get well from diseases that doctors think are irreversible, like high blood pressure, diabetes, which are reversible, you know, and heart disease, and that with reversible conditions. I even have so many people with early stage prostate cancer or early stage breast cancer, like ductal carcinoma in situ, you know, some of the who change their nutrition completely and have their pathology and their disease go away. So we're talking here about nutrition is very powerful. And when you can motivate a person and make them excited about eating healthfully and show them how good it can taste and all the potential gifts it could bring them, you don't underestimate what it could do for people. Of course, there's always, you know, irreversible in some conditions that are too far gone. But the point is that it's a tremendously powerful tool, and it's being underutilized, and it has to be something that our society embraces much more fully.
We've been talking, and we are talking, with Joel Furman, F-U-H-R-M-A-N. He's a physician who has written, he's a best-selling author, by the way, of number one bestseller, Eat to Live, but he's now written a book called Fast Food Genocide, How Processed Food is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. It's a sensational book, and we're going through some of the things in the book with him. I'm giving him some questions I know are answered in the book, and you'll enjoy this book. It's a wonderful book. Now, one of the things you talk about is that this is particularly hazardous for our minorities. Is that because they're more likely to get exposed to fast food? Do they have a greater risk genetically of addiction? Or is it just a location by accident?
Well, I'm making it clear that it's not due to genetics, that the difference between us genetics is insignificant, that our potential is there, not based on our skin color, number one. And that food and our food access has a tremendous food. The food your parents ate and the food you ate has a tremendous effect on your ability to succeed and move forward and be healthy in life and your mental ability and focus as well. And I'm saying this is a book that is putting people on equal footing and wanting to have equal opportunity for all. And after World War One and World War Two, when our government and our food industry kind of like invented food for the battlefield, where we could have like Tang and, you know, cookies and instant coffee and Twinkies, and now we we made those foods cheaply, and we, and of course, with the white supremacy movement driving a lot of blacks into northern cities with all the violence in the South, which even part of that was nutritional because the niacin deficiency and pellagra in the South after the Civil War into the early 1900s made people very violent and angry, which they took us. We denied that that niacin deficiency in a corn-based diet was causing mental illness down in those days. Now we realize that was something that was overlooked for probably 40 years before doctors admitted that nutrition was the cause of all that violence and that was a participant to it and caused homicidal and suicidal and mental illness. But the point I'm making right now is that because these foods were made cheaply and were made in big and we lack of access to fresh produce and people didn't know about micronutrients, antioxidants, and phytochemicals in those years, and people thought it was just about calories and getting enough protein and whatever it is, and we started a cycle, a vicious cycle, of hurting people that didn't have supermarket or a farm access because they no longer had access to vegetables and high phytochemical food and nuts and beans and peas and green vegetables and things like that. So we didn't realize the danger from lack of produce access, which was thrust on people more disproportionately in the inner cities and the more vulnerable populations had more damage from those errors in the development of our country, you know?
Now, Joel Berman, we're talking with the author of Fast Food Genocide. Will the competition, this is a question we got on a Twitter line, will the competition between Walmart and Amazon with free delivery of healthier food or even frozen food, will that change this actually more favorably in the cities than in the country?
Well, I don't know, maybe. I mean, you know, there's a lot of positive things going on at the same time, you know, here, and I hope this book is just part of this movement of positive change for people. Because I'm making some quite radical claims here. I'm saying that most autism, mental disorders, and learning disabilities are caused by food. And I'm saying the epigenetic changes affect our genes. And when our children are born with allergies and other medical conditions, it can be traced back to the food the parents ate even before you get birth. That the foods we eat as a kid still affects and have a negative effects on our food. So I'm saying that as people learn about nutrition, it has far-reaching effects to areas of society we never even considered had enough, were caused by what we're putting in our mouth. And so I think that...
Now, Joel, one more question we got on the Twitter line, which is, Joel Furman's done a great job. I watch him on PBS. Is this book going to be on PBS as well?
Well, I'm working on a documentary, but it's probably not going to be on PBS because my other books were self-help books, and my PBS shows were more about, you know, get yourself in better health and teaching health and nutrition to Americans. And this book is more like it has a lot of self-help potential and helps people how to eat better. And really that information is in there. But it's really, I think the message of the book is more informational. You know, it's more of a mass. I don't really think it could turn into a PBS television show, but it can turn into a documentary because there's so much there's a historical element of food and how it's affected, which with the races and how it's had a negative effect on black Americans. And it goes back into even traces the fact that the Nazi, the Hitler's white supremacist movement or philosophy came out of southern parts of the United States and the sentiment that was trying to fight against blacks and the violence against blacks, and they took it from the Americans. So it goes back to our history of this country and integrates this concept of bigotry and with food and how food played a large role in this. And I think it's important to know that because we have to fix things. We have to know where we came to know where we're going. And I think this book has a bigger potential even than I think it's my most important book ever, but maybe not one that can turn into a PBS self-help show. You know what I mean?
I want to thank you for coming on and thank you for writing the book. It is a wonderful book. Fast food, I wonderful in the sense that it stimulates the heck out of you and gets you to think way beyond where you thought beforehand. It's by Joel Furman, our guest today, Furman, Fast Food Genocide. If you've downloaded this podcast, this is 866. You can get it again. Podcast 866. Tell your friends about it. Download it, rate us, we'd appreciate it. And you can always email me at ageproof.life or ageprooflife@gmail.com for emailing me. Ageproof life@gmail.com for other guests. Thanks very much, Joel Fuhrman, author of Fast Food Genocide and many other great books, but this one really important for our society. Thanks again. And thank you, Randall, for great engineering. We'll be back next week with another great, stimulating guest and the best news of the week, but most importantly, what the medical news of the week means for you so you can take control of your health. Thanks again.